Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast 2022, episode 11. I'm Dan Tomlinson, joined as always by Rich Harrison, aka Pommy Rich. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm very well, mate, and you?
Yeah, spot on, mate. Really content, I suppose, in life and with Full FC right now, three in a row. Fun in the sun, disco dancing FC. Yeah, it was a good afternoon in Featherstone as we put 58 points past Sheffield, only conceding 12. I think, yeah, content is the word right now, isn't it?
Yeah, I've seen the tries as well, and we looked bloody good value for it, didn't we? I mean, you can only play what's in front of you, obviously, but we looked slick and didn't take it for granted. And you know, that kind of tie is always a potential banana skin. You've only got to look at some of the other results over the weekend. You know, Barrow did very, very well against Huddersfield. Lee were unlucky against Rovers. You know, we've done okay.
Absolutely, you can say Fev pushed Catalans all the way as well.
Yeah, they did.
And that's the biggest score of the weekend, 58 points. And you know, St Helens only put 46 past Whitehaven, and that's a team that Sheffield blew away themselves a few weeks ago. So, you know, that's a good result. You take everything into consideration, you've got to be happy with that. And it's we've always said it's the manner of the results, haven't we? Whether we win, whether we draw, or whether we lose, and to blow them away like that is probably exactly what the side needed. I mean, that'll give them some confidence going into what's going to be a really busy and tough schedule now as we approach Easter weekend. And really happy with what we saw. As you've alluded to, some of the tries were nothing short of phenomenal. I mean, Joe Lovadua doing a kick through from a kick return after an offload and getting the ball, and then Hull going all Harlem Globetrotter. Yeah, it was really pleasing. It was good to see this whole shape and structure involved, and obviously a lot of scores, you know, whether get working that ball to the edge, whether it's through, you know, Connor's brilliance or Connor Wynn himself, who got an hat-trick of tries and played very well. But yeah, all in all, I think the professionalism of Full FC is what stood out there. They showed Sheffield respect, their attitude was on point. You know, we can say second tier opposition, it's nothing that, you know, that wasn't expected, but like you said, they can be banana skins, these opponents, and I think that Sheffield deserves some credit, but they definitely deserve some respect as well. You know, they had some moments, they gave it a go, and they've got some decent players, and they'll have some good results in that championship this season. They've beaten Bradford as well, so they're no mugs. I think Hull deserves some credit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've got some, they've got a smatter and a players that have played in the big time as well, haven't they? So they've, absolutely. They'll be a decent team, and they look well coached and well drilled. And you know, the two tries that they scored were pretty cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty good tries. No qualms at all about saying that was a really good performance for us. I think the nice thing for us as well, Dan, is that, you know, with Tuma Vavi coming back from injury, you know, we're kind of playing Manu Mau back into the squad after injury. You know, you've still got makeshift halfbacks, you know, and all the rest of it. It's just nice that we're maintaining a bit of shape. It really gives Hodgson an interesting conundrum for this week, you know, because you've got Kane Evans back and you've got our mercurial halfback back. Well, I mean, the people that have been deputising for both of those players in their absence have done absolutely nothing wrong. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly what he decides to do. Because, I mean, does he let them back into the team? Does he put people on the bench? Does he drop people back to the bench? You know, I mean, it'd be harsh to drop McNamara after the way McNamara's played. It'd be harsh to drop Lovadua after the way he's played. Be very, very interesting to see what kind of squad he puts up against Wigan on Thursday.
It will, yeah, and that's a huge game, and it'll be a big marker and sort of like measuring point to where Hull FC are at. Look, Gale for me comes straight back into that side. He's the club captain, he's the talisman, he's the number seven. He walks straight back in. But yeah, what Hull do and what Hodgson does beyond that is certainly interesting, but isn't it nice to be having those conversations? And that's something you know, people will be talking about with the mates, with the families in the pub this week, after, you know, after work or at work. And it's just nice to have them conversations, because before it's like, well, he's going to have to play there because there's no one else. Whereas now you're thinking, actually, there's two or three options for that position and two or three for that one. And we've mentioned Connor Wynn, but there's also Mittelai Vojakupani, who's come in and had another really good account of himself. So how do you say to him, oh, you're not playing on Thursday? Same with Connor Wynn, oh, you're not playing on Thursday. And it's going to be some really tough decisions, but obviously that's what Hodgson's paid his money for, so he was all the cliches. But whatever he does, you just got to back him. I think there was a lot of people with egg on their faces after what happened at Edinley, because people saw that side and said, Lovejoy at halfback. Jack Brown at Lowe's man, they couldn't understand it, could they? And people were calling him out and saying, don't know what he's doing. And 80 minutes later, they're egg on the face, didn't they? So whatever Hodgson does, let's just back him, let's support him. he's definitely earned the right for us to do that, in my opinion. I'm seeing your opinion too. And yeah, I think we're going there with like a fresh card, really. Let's just go there and see what happens and play some rugby and, you know, get into that ground and tough up and front up. And we should be going there with absolutely nothing to fear.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's our first acid test really since Saints, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because although we lost the game against Cass, we shouldn't have done.
True.
And you know, you can't say Leeds away. I mean, on paper, Leeds away is always a hard game, but the actuality of it is that Leeds at the time were an absolute basket case and we took them to the cleaners. You know, Huddersfield at home, we should beat. This really is our, you know, and then Sheffield in the Cup. This is our acid test. This is the one where you look at it and you go, yes or no, we've made progress or we haven't. So, yeah, interesting. And, you know, live on Sky Thursday night, so it's a short turnaround for us. Some players coming back from injury and from suspension. And picking from what's getting towards being an almost, if not full-strength squad, then certainly a stronger strength squad, if that makes sense. So, you know, we've only got a couple of those long-term absences outright, really. And we should really be pushing.
We're looking healthy, aren't we? The injury stuff is a bit hard, and I don't think you can... We always say this pretty much every week, but we don't like pissing contests. We don't like comparing, saying, oh, yeah, we've got ABC out, you've got AB out, you know. But yeah, it is a valid point this year because the disruption that Hull have faced this season has been pretty substantial, to be honest. And it's not a squad that can cope with that against your St. Helens's, your Wiggins, and probably your Catalans's, and maybe your Wires too, even though they're a basket case as well. But it is a squad that can get through. You know, we saw it at Wakefield, obviously. We've seen it against Salford, we've seen it against Leeds, and we've seen it against Huddersfield. It's like last week, we mentioned the point that Hull beat Huddersfield and never really looked in doubt in losing that game. And they still had 89 players starting the stand. I mean, that's good. That deserves a lot of credit because that disruption was supposed to dismantle Hull FC this year. We thought that if we had a few key players out, then we'd lose no matter who it was. So to come through that and show some, you know, good, really good traits, you know, rolling the sleeves up, doing the tough stuff as well as the flashy stuff, that's what we all complained about after Castleford because we weren't willing to do that. It was just, oh, we'll just turn up and we'll throw the ball out and we'll win. No, that's not how it worked. No, I'm really content with how we're going at the minute. And obviously, we don't want to get carried away. We know there'll be setbacks because we know that Hull are far from the finished article. And obviously, we know we've still got some limitations. We've still got some problems. I mean, come on, we had some meltdowns last season. Not everything has been resolved. But right now, we're three in a row. We're sat in the last eight of the Challenge Cup, you know, into the quarterfinals with a good chance of progressing to the last four. Obviously, we'll come to that the week after. Don't want to disrespect Huddersfield, but it's a winnable game. We sat fifth place in Super League, having won four from the opening six. If I was offered that at the start of February, I would have bit your hand off.
Yeah, me too. Me too, mate. And it's like you say, we've done it with a vastly depleted first team. We've done it with Joe Lovadura at halfback for four games.
Exactly. Yeah,
you know, we've done it with players sin bins, players sent off, players banned, players not hitting the straps. You know, one of our marquee signings in Kane Evans playing, you know, what, 60 minutes so far?
Yeah.
You know, it's great to see, mate. We're not the finished article by any means, but we couldn't have asked for much more than what we've got. I mean, barring that CAS result, which we should still have won, you know, which we were coming on with a wet sail there and we just got tripped up at the end. Barring that CAS result, I've been content with everything. You can't talk about the St. Helens result because the St. Helens result is an aberration. Because, you know, man sent off, chucking down rain, Johnny Whiteley's, you know, just passed. It was an emotional time and we just didn't cope with either the conditions, the adversity or the emotion of the situation.
And the fact they're outstanding.
And the fact that they're the best team in the country by a mile and would probably give any NRL team a hell of a run for the money on current form.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other games, grind out a win at Wakefield, absolutely put Salford to the sword, stupid loss away at Cass, absolutely put Leeds Rhinos to the sword and then grind out a win against Huddersfield and then put Sheffield to the sword as well. So, you know, going to Wigan, Wigan will be looking at us and Wigan will be worried. Wigan will be worried. They only just beat Cass in their last match. You know, they beat Toulouse by a point. You know, they struggled over Rovers, really, the first game of the season. And you know, and then they got nilled by Catalan. So, you know, we've got every chance. We really have.
Absolutely. I look at Wigan and I think Jai Field is absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. He is a brilliant player and his speed is obviously devastating. But if you can manage that and if you can limit how many times he gets his hands on the ball, obviously Wigan are tough and Wigan are resilient, we all know that. But so are Hull. If Hull turn up with the right attitude, that we are as well. We are a tough side. We are an okay side. We're more than okay. We're a decent side. I just think we deserve a bit more credit. We deserve a bit more optimism. I'm not saying we're Harlem Globetrotter, St. Helens, you know, best thing since sliced bread, because that's just daft. But we're not as bad as some people are still making out. And I really hope we can go there and shut a few people up. And I'm not talking, you know, sections of our own fan base. I'm talking people outside of us who still don't bat an eyelid to us. They're thinking, oh, UFC, they're a joke. They're nothing. I want us to, you know, shut a few people up and raise a few eyebrows. And we could do that on Thursday night, even if we get a performance. Yeah,
you're right, because the narrative is, you know, the narrative isn't what a great result that was for Hull at Headingley. It was, our leads are terrible.
Exactly, yeah, and that was the mantra on Sky, wasn't it?
I agree, yeah. I agree. And I'm as guilty as anything. I mean, we did smash them, and they were terrible, but they played as well as we allowed them to play, is the issue, isn't it?
Well, you can say the same for Cass this weekend. I mean, we both praised Castlesford for how they pushed Wigan all the way in Super League last week. They've just gone there and smashed Leeds themselves, so then, you know, we got beat by them. We shouldn't have, but we did. I mean, people look at them and say, oh, yeah, they're 1-6 in Super League. But I tell you what, they will start winning games. They're not going to be down there for the rest of the season. They'll get a few players back because they've been depleted as well and they've been disrupted. It's easy to look at your own horizons and nothing else and say, oh, yeah, we've got injuries. And then you pay no attention to the opposition. But it's the same for Cass. And, you know, they'll get better. And, yeah, I just think all definitely deserve a bit more praise than what they're getting right now. And what got me, or what impressed me, never mind what got me, what impressed me when we played Sheffield was, you know, we raced into a big lead in the first half and there was a 5-minute spell where you could argue in the second where it sort of became a little bit clunky, a couple of errors came in, you know, wasn't really respecting the ball. Sheffield got Sheffield got a couple of tries and then instead of, you know, the game just fizzling out, Hull thought, we're not having that. We need to up it a bit. And they did. And then they ended up scoring 3 tries to finish the game off. And some of the rugby they played in those final 5 to 10 minutes was out the top draw. And I don't care who the opposition was. I mean, that Jake Connor cutout pass for Connor Wynne's hat-trick try, we saw that at Headingley 2 weeks ago, didn't we? So it's nothing we don't see in the top flight anyway. And some of the rugby was outstanding. It really was. And you can look no further than Jake Connor, because watching him is just an absolute pleasure. It really is. I mean, Jake Connor's highlight reel is absolutely incredible. And it's a point that Adrian Durham made when he wrote his all-time 13 for that he's seen in his time watching Hull FC. And he actually said he hopes it's only a matter of time before he can't leave Jake Connor out. And that's how good he is to me as well. I'm thinking it is generally an absolute pleasure to watch Connor every single week, because he just comes up with boxer tricks, whether it's a cut-out pass, a flick pass, he'll take the line on, he'll pop it, he'll go short, he'll double pump it and then pop it. That's what you pay to watch. You know, when you go to a rugby league game, that's what you want to see. You want to see players that make you think, wow, how good was that? And Connor did that at Headingley. That pass was jaw-dropping. We're thinking, bloody hell, what have we just seen there? That's absolutely incredible. And even against second-tier opposition, you know, Jake Connor's the player you're thinking, yeah, that's who I want to watch every week. He is absolutely magnificent.
But, mate, you know, there is that, you know, we were saying about, you know, potential banana skins and stuff. There is that kind of, there is always that danger that your best players will kind of go, well, I don't need to do as much today. You know, I can play 80% and it'll be better than the stuff that's in front of me. You know, and to Hull's credit and to Connor's credit, they didn't do that. They played at the same level and at the same intensity that they would have if they were playing Wigan. So, you know, that's nice to see. And that's got to be heartening for Hodgson to see. And I said it last week, and I think I said it the week before, and I'm going to say it again. I think that Cass display has made us. I really do. I think they've taken one look at it, and I think they've just gone, Jesus, you know, we've... this is what happens when we don't play with the right intensity, with the right attitude, with the right anything. This is what happens. And honestly, I think that Hodgson has kind of taken them to one side and gone, look what happens. Look what happens when you play with the right intensity. Look what happens when you play with the right attitude. You go out and you do what you did to Leeds. Look what happens when you don't. You get turned over like you did against Cass. Now, do you want to be as a club remembered for the Leeds performance or the Cass performance? Simple as. And that's what, you know, and that's seems to be in the game since Cass, seems to be how we've reacted to that performance, which is really heartening.
Yeah, literally a fortnight on. That Huddersfield game is the prime example, because that was a game where not everything went Hull FC's way. There was a few clunky plays in attack, a few errors that were creeping in, but Hull showed the fight in defence, and they showed the fight just to sometimes tuck the ball under the jumper and just go forward and just complete your set. And sometimes that's what you have to do, because it's about the set after or the set after that. It's not about scoring in every single player, every single set. It's about, you know, completing on your own terms and finishing in the corners and trying to build pressure. And that's what rugby league's all about. And Hull did that very well, certainly at Headingley to some extent against Huddersfield as well. That's what they're going to have to do against Wigan as well, and obviously going into the Easter weekend. But I can live with that. You know, if we get that attitude week in, week out, where we show that fight, we show some grit in defence, and you've got to accept that, you know, the attacking stuff, sometimes it doesn't come off, and that's part and parcel of the game. But when it does, you just got to enjoy it. But when it don't come off, we've just got to show other area, other qualities, if you like. And so far, barring that Cass game, we've certainly done that. I mean, we're both satisfied, as we say. We can refer back to the opener against Wakefield. We can refer back to Huddersfield. They're all valid points. And then you're looking at it right now. We've played 7 games in both competitions this season. We've now blown an opposition away 3 times. We've ground out 2 wins. I'm more than pretty content with that. It's a good start. It really is. We've only lost twice. One to the best side in the competition, one to Cass on an off day. It happens. It's how we respond, and so far we've responded really well. We've just got to keep it going, haven't we? It's all about continuity, and as we get players back, I pray that can continue. And yeah, I am really content. I think Hull deserve the praises. They really do. They've set themselves at a marker now, if you like, a minimum expectation. Let's just see what happens. Let's just turn up every week, play for each other, and carry this on. And when we've got players, you know, fringe players, you know, we can all wax lyrical about Jake Connor and how you know, sublime he is as a rugby league player. But when you've got people like Volji Kapani and Jordan Johnston, who's come in for the past few weeks and hasn't put a foot wrong, but then in particular, in particular, Connor Wynne, a career first hat trick. He is so good on his feet, that lad. It's ridiculous. He's quick. He's strong. I mean, there's a reason that Hull FC pinpointed him as the player to get when all that City of Hull Academy nonsense was going. You know, they got Mickey Lewis for others, and we wanted Connor Wynne. And there's a reason why. I think we're seeing that reason now.
Yeah, I agree. Do you know what, as well? I mean, you can add to that list. I reckon you can add to that list Andre Sevelia. I think he's been outstanding.
Yeah,
those 4 weeks.
That's fair.
He's been the lines he's running and the grit he's showing in defence. I think he's done himself a lot of good this last couple of weeks. And you know, an extended run in the first team is what he's always needed all of his career. You know, because he's been bloody unlucky with some injuries that have been long term. You know, and he's never really had an extended run in the first team in any of the clubs he's been at. And he's been very, very unlucky. And I just think he seems to have really grasped the nettle at Hull. And I just think he's very underrated. He's one of those players that you don't always think of when you're praising the team. But he hasn't let us down this year. He's been very good.
No, he has. He's got a bit of finesse to his game as well. I know he can do a tough carry, a big hit. And it's obviously a big block, but yeah, he's got an offload in him, he's got a pass in him, he's even got a dummy in him, which is always, you know, always nice in the arsenal of a back rower. And on the other side, you've got Manuel Mao, who's obviously crash bang wallop. He's phenomenal. I mean, sat on the far side, and he could hear every hit. You know, there was only just over 1,000 people there, and a lot of Wolf fans were stood behind the sticks at the post office road end, and somewhere on the main stand, if you like, but a few of us were on the far side, and you could hear every hit. But yeah, the point being, we're going right to left in the first half, Manuel Mao on that left edge right in front of us, and there was one instance where Ryan Johnson, an ex-Hull FC Academy / reserve player, took the ball in, and Manuel Mao absolutely smashed him, and you're hearing it, and you're almost feeling sorry for the Sheffield player. You're thinking, Christ, I hope you'll get up, pal. And you know, there was one instance again where I think it was Douglas, a prop forward called Douglas for Sheffield. He tried to put a shot on Chris Sattai and came off second best, and he was laid on the deck for about 10 minutes, and luckily he was all right. I think the coach, Mark Aston, said he was eating pizza in the change room after the game, which is, yeah, best recovery thing you can hear of, innit? So, yeah, but that's the thing. When you play a championship opposition, they can give it a go because they've got some ball skills and they've got some knowledge how to play rugby league.
Yeah.
But I think it's the size.
Nothing to lose, mate.
Exactly, it's nothing to lose. But I think that what gets them is the size and the speed of a top flight opposition. And
yeah,
Hull got a roll on. I wouldn't say it was men against boys because that's disrespectful, but the speed did tell. I mean, you've got Jordan Johnston scooting out the ruck and making breaks. And again, give him his credit because he's come in here and put a foot wrong for the past four games. So, yeah. Really good, professional, respectful, and performance with a good attitude, and nice to score some points. And the manner of the tries were obviously really pleasing with some fringe players, you know, performing as they have done for weeks now, and that's all good to see.
Yeah, no, that's all she wrote, mate. That's all we can ask for. You know, you ask for your team to go out and win the game in front of them, and that's what they've done. And they've done it well, and they've done it in style, and they've done it with the team that we put out. So what else can you ask for?
Yeah, absolutely. And just the smartness as well in Hull FC too. It's a point you've briefly alluded to already. The Carlos coming back from injury, that was Carlos Tumavavi, that was his first game back. You know, he was all class as always. He looks absolutely ripped to smithereens, as he always has done. That's another thing, right? Look, being so close to the pitch, some of Hull FC players are absolutely shredded. You know, they are fit. They're looking top nick in condition. Obviously, we don't know if there's a strapping underneath the shirt or the shorts or whatever. But, you know, from a naked eye, looking at that pitch, they look fit. They look strong. They look like they can go the distance this season. I don't mean the distance in making Old Trafford. I mean the distance in playing to round 27. We'll see what happens beyond that. But, yeah, we're looking good. We really are. And the point there is it's great to see Carlos come back. It's great to see Manuel Mau come back and hit the ground running as well. And they were smartly managed. We took both our left edge and our right edge off, both centres and both back rowers. And that left us a little bit disjointed for a period in the second half. And to be honest, that means that Hull deserve even more credit for the how they adapted and how they managed that and how they came through and scored three more tries at the end. I mean, you had Lover Dewey moving to the centre, Danny Alton moving into half-back. You know, there was a bit of chop and change there. And, yeah, the way that Hull managed that and dealt with that, I was impressed. But, yeah, the fact that we've got players coming back in, Manuel Mau and Carlos Tumavavi, and they've done so well. Josh Griffin as well. I mean, he's come back from a potentially career-ending injury, and he's looked the part. I know Andre Cervelli again, injury troubles, looking the part. So, all in all, yeah, really happy. Adam Swift too. I mean, is there a Hull FC fan who's not in love with Adam Swift? Because I don't think he ever has a bad game. What a signing he's been.
Yeah, you're right. He could have very easily had his nose put out of joint. You know, when he turns up and he realises he's probably the third choice winger. Because we, you know, the day after we signed him, we go out and sign bloody Fanua. But to credit to him, he's buckled down and he's earned his place and kept his place, and he's made it very, very easy for the hierarchy of the club and the coach of the club to say, well, you know what, you're surplus to requirements because we've got a good winger. You know, and that's all you can ask for. He's done very, very well. It's not easy coming from a team like St Helens, coming to a team like Hull. You know, yeah, he might have been sat on the bench and everything and not getting a start every week. But he's the other side of the country from where he's from. You know, it's difficult sometimes for a player like that to settle, and I think he's just done a brilliant job.
Yeah, absolutely. As was McIntosh before his injury. And it was good to see Darnell there supporting the team. With all the injured players, I saw Scott Taylor. Brad Fash obviously was rested, he was there. A lot of comments about his mullet and his nickname Fashionhausen coming from that far side, which a bit of banter, which was nice, he took it all well. One ball guy actually took his hat off and went, can I have a transplant? I want one. Which was quite fun to see. But what is really pleasing, this is a really, really admirable factor in the Hull FC squad right now, is those injured players were getting pestered by kids all game, but it didn't bother them. They had selfies, they were even passing a ball with a couple of the little lads, and it's just nice to see that engagement with the players. And I think this is a group that doesn't mind spending the time with the younger fans, or even the older generation of fans who still wanted selfies post-match. And even the players that played, I mean, some of them took an absolute age to get around the pitch because they were, you know, posing for photos and signing stuff. And
nice.
Just really good to see. But yeah, Luke Gale in particular. One of my mates, Kev Deaton, who we go to away games with at home, he sits in the West Stand, and in the Kingston suite, sometimes they're lucky enough to get a player who will speak to him pre and post game. And that player last week in the Huddersfield game was Luke Gill. And he said, literally talking about Hull, he could listen to him all day. He said he was so positive and so ambitious about what he can bring and what Hull FC can do over the next couple of years. But he elaborated on that, saying the time that Luke Gill had for the kids. And obviously that day was junior takeover, which is a concept that you can't really praise the club enough there. I mean, praise where it's warranted. You know, we call the club out when we don't see something right, as we did last year. But I'll also praise them when they deserve it. And they deserve it there, because it's really good. Because they're, after all, the kids are the next generation of fans. They're the ones we're going to be relying on in 10, 20 years'
time. Didn't they used to have a big sign up saying, you know, only last 2 minutes for you, but it lasts a lifetime for them?
Exactly. And that's the nail on the head, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kids will be going away bouncing. I mean, one of my Up the Cream regulars, Hair Lad, was mirroring Brett Hodgson last week, and he got to sing Old Faithful after the win in the changing room. I mean, friggin' hell, I'd love that. Nice. I'd love that now. I mean, I'm 30 this week. I'd absolutely love that. Never mind, a little like eight, 9 year old. So yeah, that aspect, I think it's something that don't really get that much focus, but I think it's really good, the fact that Hull can engage with fans like that. And yeah, really, really impressed to see them actually spend the time there. And I think it says a lot about Luke Gill as well, because a lot of fans, especially myself included, were a little bit sceptical, because this is a player that we've, you know, given some stick to over the previous 5 years at Cass and Leeds. So we're thinking, all right, and he's replacing an absolute club legend, because let's not beat around the bush. Mark Snead is a Hull FC legend, and I will say that forever, for what he did at Wembley alone. So he's huge boats to fill. He's obviously got that pantomime villain aspect, if you like, from his Cass and Leeds days. But he's come in, conducted himself absolutely impeccably, says the right thing, speaks really well, you know, engages with fans, engages with kids. I'm actually really excited to see what he does on the field now when he comes back. He's a figure in the game, is Luke Gill. He's a good talker, and he can talk a good game. And he's the type of player you want leading your club, and he's the club captain after all. And I think off the field, what he's done, and we've heard it in the media, Brett Hodgson's come out and said he's developing Ben McNamara, which is good to hear. Because you said this last week, didn't you? You want your halfback, you want your junior halfback shadowing your senior halfback, and likewise with your winger, you want Harvey Brand shadowing Adam Swift. You want Marcus Walker shadowing Carlos Tumavavi, and just good to see.
What you want is Ben McNamara to actually put the gauntlet down and more or less go into the head coach's office and just go, I've heard all these rumours about you going after Jake Truman, done. It's safe in my hands. That's what he's got to come out and make an irresistible case for his own skills. And at the moment he is. And he's doing that a lot because he's learning from one of the absolute best. And, you know, we can say what we like about Gale as a person or Gale as a player or whatever. He's brought something different to the club. Snead was a great kicker and a good schemer, but he wasn't a leader of men, ever. Generally speaking, if you've got a halfback that's doing the stuff that Snead did, he'd be the captain of the club, and he never was. And there's a reason for that, and that's because he didn't like it. He didn't want to be the captain of the club. He doesn't like that on his shoulders. Whereas someone like Gale craves that. They want to be the centre of it. They want to be the person who's there to blame when we do it wrong and the person that's there for the accolades when we do it right. Snead always seemed to me to be a little bit like he wanted the quiet life a bit too much.
I don't think Snead...
If there's anything you can lay at Snead's door, is that he's not a leader of men.
It was so laid back to the point where it was probably a detriment to him. He's the most chill person on the planet, I think, Mark Snead. He don't care what people think, but within his collective unit as a side, I don't think he was accountable as much as a Gale. I remember a quote from Jordan Abdul after he played for Hull once, and he said that halfbacks, we take all the glory when we win, but it's all our fault when we lose. To some extent, that's true. To some extent, that's a load of nonsense. He was obviously saying it in jest, but I think when it was the halfback's fault...
If you're gonna give an anecdote like that, you'd rather listen to Scott. You'd rather listen to Luke Gale than you would listen to Jordan Bloody Abdul.
No, true. But the point the point is, I think you've got to meet in the middle somewhere, aren't you? And I think Luke Gayle will do that. He'll be accountable. You can guarantee that when LFC lows, Luke Gayle will come out and said, yeah, I should have been better. Good example, I watched the press conference after the Sydney Roosters derby, and there was Trent Robinson and James Tedesco obviously sat side by side, and asked James a couple of questions, and he just said, it's my fault, you know, I didn't play well. I'll take it on the chin and, you know, carry it on the back type of thing. I think you'll get that with Luke Gayle. You'll get accountability, you'll get leadership, and yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing him get a run of games now, because how he's conducted himself off the field in what's probably been a frustrating time, because he's not injured, he's been suspended, hasn't he? So that's frustrating in itself, and just the way he's conducted himself, he's turned my head a bit, to be honest. I'm sort of thinking, I don't know what I'm going to expect here. Obviously, we back every single player who comes to the club. You give him a chance. I mean, look what's happened with Joe Lovajua. Fan favourite already, and he's played 7 games. So, yeah, you give a player a chance. But, yeah, Luke Gayle's definitely turned my head, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does on the field now. And especially with that relationship with Jake Connor, is exciting itself. That 7-1 combination, that, dare I say, could be devastating.
Yeah, and do you know what? I mean, we were laughing and joking about that, you know, what happened at Leeds when he waved up a big entry and everything. But that kind of thing, that really shows it shows mutual respect. It shows that there's a really good camaraderie. It shows that, you know, that they're not afraid to hang a bit of crap on each other. That kind of thing's worth its weight in gold. Do you know? That really is. As long as it doesn't get too flippant, that kind of thing is worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, you could probably argue we probably went too far with Radford. Don't get me wrong, as a bloke, he is one of the best blokes you'll ever meet, because he's just so full of life, is Lee Radford. You can have a laugh with him, you can have a joke, even as a, you know, a gobshite who writes a rugby league fanzine like me, you could always have a laugh with him. And I think he was like that with his players as well, and maybe it went a little bit too far. I think with Hodgson, again, this was good to see after the game. Hodgson walked over to the side of the pitch where all his injured players, and they're all patting each other on the back, fist pumping, high-fiving. I think Hodgson's got the right balance. I think there's a respect there, but there's also a friendship there, if you like. And that's the thing. It's about getting that balance in it, like good cop, bad cop. Usually, you bad cop's the head coach and your good cop's the assistant. But I think Hodgson's got both of them, both that balance right. I can't praise that man enough for what he's doing at Hull FC right now, especially everything that's happened, you know, the injury card, the squad management that he's had to do. The fact that he's come to the club as well in a pandemic, that's what it was at the time, and also there's a huge thing with COVID last year. Yeah, I don't think we can praise that man enough. But yeah, the Gayle point, I think, is huge. And the fact that the side have so much time for the fans these days. And yeah, it's easy to say that after you've just put 58 points on a side and everyone's happy and everyone's enjoyed the game and been entertained. It's probably a bit different when you go to Cass and you get beaten the manner we did. But, you know, fans, we're not daft, are we? We respond. When we see effort, when we see grit, when we see fight, we'll support you win, lose or draw. It's as simple as that. All we want is just to turn up and have a dig every week.
Well, you look at Wigan, right? I mean, their fans were absolutely screaming the place down when they got nilled at Catalans. But, you know, they're still, what, third in the league? Are they second or third in the league? And they've only lost one game all season. You know, I think that you've just got to understand that you're not going to win every game, and there will be disappointing performances. And all you got to hope for as a fan is that your coach goes, I know why.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know why. I can spot why. And, you know, the worst thing as a fan that you can hear is your head coach going, oh, we trained really well during the week. I have no idea where that came from. Do you know what I mean? Because that is the Richard Agar. That's exactly it, you know. He realised, and, you know, I'm no fan of Richard Agar, but I think he just realised straight away there, well, there's nothing more I can do to this group of players. I've tried everything, and nothing I'm doing in my entire coaching arsenal of everything that I've ever done as a coach is working. So therefore, that's it. I'm walking because I don't think I can do any more. Mm. Now the thing with Richard Agar is he's got the safety net and the sure and certain knowledge that he's going to move upstairs at Leeds. It doesn't really matter, you know, because he's still going to have a job. So that's probably the safest way to resign in the history of the police sport. But at the end of the day, he just realised there's nothing more he could do to that group of players. He couldn't improve them any more than he had. So he walked. And I mean, that shows a certain amount of self-awareness that a lot of coaches don't have, eh? And you don't know how much pressure was brought to bear from above either. But as a coach, all you can do is learn from the bad and, and make sure it doesn't happen again, or make sure it doesn't happen to the same extent again. And that seems to be, at this point, what Hodgson has done this year, which is great. You know, the alternative is Radford 2 years ago and Agar at Leeds 3 weeks ago, you know, where he was just absolutely, you know, that game after Hull, when he was interviewed after the Hull game, he was dumbfounded. He didn't know where that had come from. You know, he's got the players he wants. They've gone out and signed all of these superstars. They've paid him an absolute fortune, and he had absolutely no idea where that performance had come from. That must be heartbreaking as a head coach.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. Heartbreaking.
Absolutely, and you flip that to Brett Hodgson. Then he comes out after Castleford. Attitude was the word straight away. He comes out after Sheffield, professional. That's the word straight away. He's on point with his interviews pre and post match every single week. Yep. And I cannot emphasise the point enough. It's so easy to get carried away right now. It really is, because we've won three and things are looking okay again. And especially after what happened at the end of last year, losing 9 out of 10. The fact we're winning again, the fact we're playing well again, the fact that we've got some things to be excited about again. It can easily make you get carried away, and we still know the limitations. We still know that although we had a good winter of wheeling and dealing, this winter is just as, if not more, important. We know that we're not the finished article. We know we've got a lot of areas to prove, and we know that we've got a lot to do to continue to move forward. But again, it can be tedious and it can be repetitive, but I'm really content with what we're seeing right now and the direction that Hull FC are moving in under Brett Hodgson. The players that he's bringing forward, the parts that he wants to implement in this side for years to come. I mean, youth is a massive part of what Hull are trying to do right now. And you look at the centrepiece of the youth right now, which is Connor Wynn, and you think there's plenty more where he came from. You look at Ben McNamara. All right, yeah, I had a little bit of a pop at him after Cass. He just didn't step up. He didn't lead the team. He didn't get the forwards going, because it's still the halfback's responsibility. You've got to say, right, forwards, I want you to take three drives and give me the ball. But there was none of that, because all didn't go forward. So where was the messages coming from? Were they coming from Reynolds? Were they coming from McNamara? I just didn't see any of that at Cass. And when he got run over for a couple of tries, I questioned his performance. I really did. But, you know, since then, he's stood up and he's been counted for. And he's a young half, obviously. He's matured. He can definitely say that. He's professional. You know, I've heard some good stories about Ben McNamara, the fact that he does loads of extras in training, you know, with his goal kicking and even place kicking.
Well, you know, he spent his formative years in Sydney. You know,
yeah.
came through the Roosters nursery. You know, the Roosters nursery that has, you know, Joseph Suwali's come through and all the others. You know, he's got a good pedigree, and obviously his dad was an international and everything. He's got a hell of a pedigree. So you know, it's good, and he's got his head screwed on, looks like, as well. He's had a, like you say, COVID affected start to his career at Hull, really. But you know, we could do a lot worse.
We could, yeah, we really could, and he deserves some credit. And again, it goes back to Diego on face point, and if he comes through and is a star for the rest of, you know, his career at LFC, then I'll quite happily take that egg on my face. That's if questioning one performance equates to having egg on my face. I don't know. To some people, it probably does. Yeah. But you know, I'm happy to be proven wrong in anything. You know, if we call a player out and he shuts us up, Jordan Johnson's a good example. You know, both sort of questioning what he's bringing to the table. He's had four good performances now. Again, I'm happy to be proven wrong, because if I'm proven wrong, that means that it's good for the club. And yeah, it just all boils down to what we've all said about Hodgson and the direction he's trying to go in, the shape and the structure that he's brought to the club, the fact that everyone seems to be on the same hymn sheet. I know there's a few cliches I've just thrown in there, but I think it's all relevant and it's positive at the moment and it feels fresh. It probably feels so positive and so fresh because of the back end to last year, and that's what we're comparing it to. But if this continues and this is what we get all the way through the season, then that goes down as a bloody good year. Because what did we say before a ball was kicked off? We said if we'd sneak into a playoff spot, if we had one or two results in the cup, if we won a playoff game, I'd be more than content. In fact, I'd probably be bouncing around my living room. That would go down as everything considered, that would go down as a really good season. And then look at the squad, you know, come the winter, well, they'll be doing that right now, never mind the winter, but you look at the players you're going to let go, you look at the ones you're going to keep, and you look at the ones you're going to bring in from elsewhere, and then you think next year, right, top four, you know, that's the target now. We want to go a little bit further, and that's progression, that's development. And I really do think we're going to see that under Brodgson. I really do. He seems to be a man that's switched on. He knows exactly what he wants and he knows how to get it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And, you know, like we've said, it's a case of that balancing act, which is, you know, while you're planning for next year, you've got to keep winning this year's matches to keep your job. Otherwise, next year's academic, innit? Because it'd be somebody else looking after the team because you're not there.
True.
So, you know, he's doing a good enough job for me. He's not put a foot wrong.
No, and I mean, I used the analogy in a piece I wrote a few issues ago, in Up the Cream, and I said that if you look at Radford's first 3 years, last year was like Brett Hodgson's 2014, this year is his 2015, and then next year will be his 2016. So right now, in 2015, it's fair to say that Hull had some moments, some results I was thinking, you know, wow, we look all right here, but then we had some setbacks, and I think that's what we're going to get this year. But then obviously 2015, we got our wheeling and dealing right, we let go of the right players, we retained the right players, and we brought the right players in. So that this is our 2015, if you like. Then if we get that right, then who knows? Maybe 2016, we can have a season where we are in the top bracket again. It's doable. It really is, because we have got some outstanding players at LFC. Some, you know, Chris Sattai, Liggy Sow are two names that we haven't even mentioned yet. They are as good as anything in Super League. You know, the back rowers that we've mentioned, the centres that we've mentioned, the wingers, obviously the half, the fullback who's in the very top bracket of players in the whole competition. You know, we've got some outstanding components. We really have. It's about nurturing them and hopefully we'll just get better and better. We'll keep developing as a team. We'll keep progressing as a team. And hopefully we can keep going with this positivity because it's infectious, isn't it? I love it. It's much better than sitting here and ranting every week about how crap we've been. If we can keep this going, mate, into the summer months, I'll be more than content. I'll probably be doing backflips.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, mate. All we can do is ride the wave as fans. And at the moment, it's a pretty nice wave.
Yeah. Absolutely. Challenge Cup card then, round of 16, round 6, whatever they call it these days. Wigan 20, Salford 0. Probably no surprises there. Whitehaven 4, St Helens 46. Rovers 24, Lee 18. Elaborate on the point again. We blow a championship opposition away, they struggle. Leeds 16.
Just read the BBC report for that, mate. Support report for that, which says Rovers hung on. You know, that wasn't about, they scored a couple of late, consolation tries. They were a real threat, Lee. Real threat.
Yeah, exactly. Leeds 16, Cass 40. And again, yeah, exactly. LOL.
I watched that.
I saw the second half after we got back from Fev. The damage had already been done. I think they blew them away in the first half, didn't they, at 28-0. Catalans 27, Featherstone 14. Again, a championship opponent pushing a Super League one all the way. I know, obviously, Feth and Lee are the top bracket of the championship, but again, Sheffield are no mugs. They're really not. Beating Bradford this year, they stuffed Whitehaven, and obviously we got a bigger score than what St Helens posted this week. So again, it all falls into our dizzy height gloat fest, really, doesn't it? Another LOL performance. Warrington, with all their millions of pounds, 12, Wakefield 16. That's, you know, not bad for Wakefield.
What results for Wakey, that? Two amazing results there for Wakey against Warrington.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair play to them. Yeah. That'll be three in a row now, won't it, for them? Two Super League wins, to lose Wire, then obviously Wire again in the Cup. So they've turned a corner. And again, I watched this game last night, yesterday afternoon, evening, whatever you want to call it, at my mum's house. Barrow 16, Huddersfield 30. And Barrow were in striking distance of Huddersfield right up until the 68th minute. So, and there was one or two moments where you're thinking, Christ, you know, they really did push them. They really did. They had played some good stuff. Must admit, the whole BBC coverage of that was excellent. It really was. The feature with Barrow before the game, just everything about it was really good. But yeah, it just emphasises the points we've made, doesn't it? And another thing as well, only 2,627 at Warrington. That's shocking, isn't it? That's abysmal.
Yeah, that's awful. Yeah, that's awful.
It's worrying, to be honest. That's top flight side. I know it's obviously Challenge Cup, but again, against top flight opposition. A knockout game, Challenge Cup. Obviously, there's a bit of romance with the Cup. There's the nostalgia of the Cup, the prestigiousness of the Cup. To get 2,500, if that was all, I think I'd be head in the sand, meltdown territory, thinking what the F is going on.
Yeah, well, it's a good job they have got a multi-millionaire owner, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if they didn't, that's not sustainable.
No, that's horrendous. Yeah, really bad. Not good for the sport at all. And I know there was only 1,000 at Fed, but that was expected. You know, Sheffield aren't going to bring many, and obviously...
Yeah, 800 of them were from Hull.
Yeah, about 8 and 9 from Hull, yeah. I think there was only about 5 or 6 at Leeds as well, and 2 of them were from Cass. So, yeah, some shocking attendances. If we're going down that road, I actually do believe that the Cup should be part of your membership. I don't think we should be charging extra.
Yeah.
Put the membership up by a tenner. It won't bother me. And then you club the Cup game. Obviously, I don't know, that's sod off for Hull because we've had 2 away ties.
That actually makes financial sense as well, because if the club go further into the Cup competition, then there's prize money and everything which would offset that.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Obviously, the more people you've got coming through the gate, the more likely you are to win as well. So, that actually makes fair financial sense.
Well, if you look at all normal non-COVID related eras, if you like, we have knocking on the door of 8,000-9,000 members. That's 80-90 grand extra just from charging a tenner more. Some people would probably kick off, but I personally wouldn't have a problem with that. And if we don't get the Cup game, or if we don't get the home playoff game, then so what? It's money in the club's coffers that I don't really care. I'm not going to miss that tenner.
I'd be easy with that.
Yeah. Something to consider anyway, because some of them Challenge Cup attendances were pitiful. Although on the contrary, good to see Whitehaven getting the best part of 5,000 people up in Cumbria watching that. They were really well supported. So, yeah, that's a positive to end on a negative there.
I mean, it's the same in soccer, isn't it? Because FA Cup games have been really badly attended for years now. People see the Cup almost like it's a bit of a sideshow, I think. Always never really felt like that for our sport, because, you know, the Cup competition's an intrinsic part of the game. You know, it's your chance to go play at Wembley, and they don't play the grand final at Wembley, and you don't play anything else at Wembley. So it was a real point of difference, especially for the Aussies coming over, who always were just like, I want to play at Wembley. That was their big thing about coming over to an English team, was that they wanted to play at Wembley, you know. So, that's worrying. It's worrying that the attendances are down. But, you know, understandable when Warrington are dishing out some of the crap that they've been dishing out recently.
Again, right, you look at Wyre, you look at Leeds, you look at Cass. Mm-hmm. All right, I know there's some circumstances that were mentioned with a couple of those teams, but look where they are and look at the reactions that they're having right now, both in terms of their own fan base and the media. Then look at
Yeah.
Not that bad, is it?
It's not, is it? Bloody isn't. And Rovers as well. I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, Jesus, what the cat amongst the pigeons this week with Tony Smith not turning up to the pre-match
press
briefing
conference.
With the press.
Yeah.
You know, and on the same week where Leeds are looking for a coach. I mean, even if, you know, it's a conspiracy theory and everything, and even if there is nothing in it, and even if it was just he was busy and they put, I think Stanley Jane did it, and they put Stanley Jane up to do it instead. You know, English is his second language, to be fair. Even if that's the case, and he was busy and he did have something else on, it's really not a good look, is it?
Well, come out and say that, don't you?
If you wanted to stoke a conspiracy theory, that's the way to do it.
Yep, and with us going there in 3 weeks' time, yeah, let's keep them going. Let's have them in meltdown mode, and let's have us, you know, guns blazing and looking up at things as it is right now. Moving on to the NRL then, just going to have my 30-second gloat on Penrith Panthers. 4 representative players out in Nathan Cleary, James Fisher-Harris, yep, here we go, Brian Tower and Liam Martin. It's all right. We'll just we'll have Isaac Tago in there. Oh, just throw young Tyler May on the wing. It's no problem. I'll just throw another back rower in. It's no, just put Opgood on the bench. Yep, no dramas. And the crews. Well, I won't say crews. The official Twitter feed said crews. It was a little bit clunky at times. And this is the thing, right? Penrith are top of the table, 3 from 3, and they're still not at top gear by any stretch of the imagination.
They've still got a lot more to give.
Yeah, the 3 from 3.
They haven't been good. Yeah, they haven't been good, and they've still got Cleary to come back.
Exactly. You know? What an organisation.
I tipped against them this week because I just thought without Cleary, it might just be a game too much for them. I just did this week. But obviously I was wrong. Again. Yeah.
Never doubt the Panthers, mate. Best rugby league organisation in the world.
Well, let's go through the card then. So Thursday night, St George and Sharks. really good game for the if you're a Shaq supporter, really. Nico Hines has absolutely hit the ground running there. Great signing from Melbourne for them. And obviously nice to see Fitzgibbon getting a win under his belt as head coach as well. Dragons don't look great. They've also got a load of stuff going on back saying George Burgess has been arrested for sexual assault, and yet he's still being named in the squads and stuff. So there's a little bit of media attention on that. And they don't seem to be coping with it well as a team. Also, Wendell Saylor's son Tristan, who was at St George Dragons player last year, he's been done for rape as well, and he's in court at the moment, so the club's name is absolutely getting dragged through the mud. So that's not great at the moment. The Dragons, I wouldn't say they're a team in crisis just yet, because they've had a fair start to the season, but Thursday was a step in the wrong direction for them. Sharks were very, very good. The Friday early game, and I did say this on Twitter, someone said, nothing says Friday 6 p.m. more than Tigers versus Warriors. It's the game where teams go to die, that game, that 6 o'clock on a Friday. You know, people are still getting home from work. No one actually goes to the game unless they take the afternoon off. And Tigers were abject. Awful. Awful. Luke Brooks has lost any semblance of skill, of confidence, of momentum, or anything. He looks lost. And unfortunately for us, it's not great at the moment by any stretch of the imagination. Gildart's looking all right in the centres. You know, we should have had a try. The referee refused to put it up to the big screen, and it was a fair try. It would have probably been given the green light, and it was at a fairly critical juncture in the game where we would have then gone, I think, 12-10 up at the time if it had been given. But apart from one dodgy referee decision, Warriors were appalling. We were appalling. Just not great. I mean, Gildart ran for 200 metres. Not that you'd know on the night, because every time he got the ball, there were three Warriors players on him, and he had to just try and jink around and everything. And he's actually proving to be a decent player. Problem is, he's getting the ball in dead end positions, and he's not a finisher. He's a good metre maker. But anyway, yeah. So Tigers are now none from three, and the only team in the NRL not to have got a point yet.
Ouch.
Then the game that really screwed my tipping for the week was Souths and Roosters. I honestly thought the Roosters had smashed them. And the Rabbitohs were very, very, very good value. I think I tweeted at half time in that one that Latrell Mitchell had been lazy, disinterested, didn't look like he wanted to be there. And I actually said, you watch him come out in the second half and actually do something, because he's expended no energy up to now. And second half, he exploded. They were very, very good second half. Roosters looked appalling and looked rudderless. Didn't look like there was any leadership on the pitch. Every time Tedesco got the ball, apart from the try that he scored, every other time he got the ball, he was hammered, or he dropped it, or he knocked on, or he dropped a high ball. He didn't look right. And Souths were very, very good value for the win. Next game was was the Panthers and the Knights. Like you say, very professional Panthers performance. Knights played 60 minutes, I think, with 12 men because of an appalling attempted... it wasn't even a tackle. The bloke didn't even have the ball. Mitch Barnett was kind of running laterally to try and slide across in defence. And there was a Panthers player that had come through on a dummy run. And I don't know whether he meant to or whether he put his arm up like as a self-defence thing, but he just caught him flush on the chin with his elbow. And it was not a good look at all. And he was immediately sent from the field. I mean, not even a, let's go to the big screen and have a look at this. Not even a, here's a, on report and 10 minutes in the bin. Get off. It was one of those. Did you see it?
I did, yeah. I didn't watch the game live, so obviously it was a 4 a.m. start in the UK. But
yeah, not good.
Watched it. Yeah, we got up about between seven and half past, and yeah, Stonewall red. Some people say the game's going soft, and some people whinge at this and that, but that is a red card no matter what area you're in.
No, that was a red card in the 80s.
It's a grub shot on a player who didn't even have the ball. No need for it. What do they say in the NFL? They got unnecessary roughness. Well, that was just complete utter thuggery.
Yeah.
No place for it.
If you didn't, to anyone that's listening to this, if you didn't see the game, just imagine Will Smith striding up on stage and smacking Chris Rock in the face. It was similar to that. Storm and Eels, what a game. I mean, this is ridiculous, this game. So 24-all at full time. And it was one of those games that seesawed. You know, it was one team up, then the other team, then the next team, then the other team. And really, I mean, the Eels were looking like they were going to win it before Pappenhausen scored and then converted his own try. And it looked like they were going to get out of jail. The Storm looked like they were going to get out of jail like they did the previous week against Souths. And then Golden Point, up steps, I think it was Clint Gutherson tries to kick a field goal. And it comes off the post and, of all people, Ray Stone, second row forward, comes thundering through, gets it off the rebound, and then steps the halfback and crashes over the line. Now, in the act of stepping the halfback, he's done his MCL. His ACL, sorry, and he's out for the entire season. In fact, that's the last game he will ever play for the Eels because he signed for the Dolphins next year. He signed for the Redcliffe Dolphins.
That's nuts.
So the last act he did as an Eels player was to step Pappenhausen and go crashing over the line, doing his ACL in the process. Unbelievable. What a finish to the game. And I mean, they carried him off, you know, couldn't walk, and he's gone. He scored two tries and he was absolutely phenomenal the entire game, Ray Stone. And he's not one of those players that you look at and think he's going to be a game breaker, but he certainly was on Saturday night. And then, talking of mental ends to a game, Titans against the Raiders. At one point, the Titans were 22-0 up. Raiders, you know that old adage, if you score just before half-time, you go into the sheds a lot happier?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what happened. Raiders scored, literally the 40th minute, the 39th minute, to go 22, 22-4, actually, because they missed a kick. And then the second half, they just didn't look back. You know, bang, 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 four really good tries. And Schneider, the halfback, who's the reserve halfback, only managed to kick two goals. And the Raiders actually ended up outscoring the Titans 5-4. Just an absolute insane performance, which has probably saved Ricky Stewart's career as a coach, I think. That halftime team talk, he did something to them and galvanised them, and that was nothing short of a miracle, I thought. And then the last two games on Sunday, the Broncos and the Cowboys. Cowboys just absolutely steamrolled them. And have I got egg on my face? Because I thought they'd be pretty close to being wooden spooners this year. They absolutely took the Broncos apart. And the man who did the damage was Dearden, Tommy Dearden, who the Broncos got rid of last year so that they could get Adam Reynolds in. And Adam Reynolds looked laboured, poor. His kicking was off, kicked out on the full a couple of times. Kelly wasn't allowed to do anything. Cowboys had obviously done their homework from the previous week. And just completely stifled the Broncos team. They ended up winning that 38-12. Jeremiah Nenai, who's a young kid, he got a hat-trick. Dearden did the damage there. And Herbie Farnworth was pretty good for the Broncos. He ran for over 200 metres again. And he's proving to be probably a bright spark for them this year. He's really coming to his own, Herbie Farnworth. So wouldn't be at all surprised if he was one of our centres in the World Cup at the end of the year.
Well, that's two.
In the last game.
So I was just saying that's two English centres you've just pinpointed there. That's good from an England point of view with the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was pretty good. He was pretty good. Like I say, he ran for a lot of metres. He looked the part, you know. He just, every time he got the ball, he was dangerous. He scored two tries. 135 metres he ran for. 66 post-contact metres for a centre. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's like I say, I'm not one that usually hangs on stats like that, but it was worth looking at because he was a cut above the rest of the players around him. Really, he was the one bright spot. And then the last game of the round, another mental one. So the Bulldogs scored like two very early tries and they were 12-0 up. They were 10-0 up because they missed both of their conversions but did kick a penalty. And then and the Sea Eagles just came over the top of them. And it was 12 all right up until the death, and it looked like it was going to go to Golden Point, another one going to Golden Point, and Dally Cherry Evans kicked a field goal with about three minutes left, and they hung on. The Sea Eagles were not great, but did just enough. Bulldogs, again, that's about as good as I think they're going to play, and they still lost against a team that was poor. So I think it's going to be a long year for the Bulldogs. Again, you know, Trbojevic, last couple of weeks, Tommy Trbojevic, this is the last couple of weeks, he's been very well policed by whoever played against them. This week, being against the Bulldogs that were a little less prepared, he ran for nearly 250 metres, scored a try, and looked a little bit back to his old self. And the point we were making earlier about, you know, Carlos and Mau playing themselves into form against poorer opposition, that's exactly what Trbojevic did this week. Played himself back into form against pretty poor opposition in the Bulldogs.
Yeah. The thing I've took out the opening couple of rounds of the NRL, especially going down a Hull FC point of view, is James Tedesco has been lambasted as the best player in the world for past 2-3 years now, and obviously Tom Trbojevic is right up there as well, as is Ryan Papenhuyzen. And Papenhuyzen aside, you could say Tedesco certainly and Turbo Tom, they haven't had the best starts to the season. And the point there is, whenever Jake Connor has a bad performance, that's all people comparing to, saying, I should do this, you should do that. The first round, when Sydney Roosters played Newcastle, and Tedesco got it horribly wrong on the kick, and he ended up trying to scoop the ball up, and it came out of him when he was on the ground, and Newcastle picked it up and scored. I mean, just imagine the reaction if that was Jake Connor, from those who love to criticise him.
Oh, I know.
It really winds me up, and some of our own fan base come into this category as well. It really does get on my skin.
Yeah, I 100% get that. And I tell you what, there's not a single Roosters supporter that, even if he had a terrible season, there's not a single Roosters supporter that will be jumping up and down saying he can't be our fullback next year, because they know how good he is when he's on form. It's just, you know, class is permanent, form's temporary.
Exactly.
I'm a big believer in that. And, you know, you pick the side that's on form, but unfortunately, when you've got someone as good as Tedesco at 80% is better than most other players at 110. You know, so you always give him the benefit of the doubt because he's got the runs on the board, you know, because he's done it in the past. So, yeah, interesting. I mean, I actually did tweet as well with Michael Maguire at the Tigers. He looked lost, forlorn. And to the extent where, you know, you look at how Agar looked after that whole, and certainly after the game afterwards when they got tonked at Salford as well. You know, he looked lost and bereft of ideas, and that's certainly what Michael Maguire at the Tigers looked like as well. And I actually tweeted afterwards, you know, it looks like he's pricing up a plane ticket to Leeds. To me, I wouldn't be at all surprised. I mean, Leeds supporters I've seen over the last couple of days have said things like, you know, oh, wouldn't it be great if we got this guy or this guy or this guy? What about this guy and everything? And I thought, well, all of those people are under contract, and most of them are under contract to NRL clubs. It's not the days where an English team can wave the hand and go, we want you, and an NRL team will fold, and an NRL coach will fold his hand and go, right, I'm going to England to coach. So that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. The pinnacle of the game is the NRL for these people, and they want to coach in the NRL. Brett Hodgson wants to coach in the NRL. You know, he's got a 3-year contract. If he does well with Hull, I'm pretty sure he'd love a go back at the NRL, because there's form for blokes that have done that. Maguire himself, Justin Holbrook, you know, what's his name at the Roosters?
Trent Robinson.
Trent Robinson, they've all done it. They've all come over here and made a success of it. Nathan Brown the same, and then gone back over to the NRL. And I'm pretty sure that's what Brett Hodgson had won. But for Leeds supporters to come out and go, oh, look, this guy, you know, who's currently coaching this team, we can get him. No, you can't. Until you see what's happening at the Tigers, and Maguire might just go, I need to go back over there to rehabilitate my reputation, which might be an option for him. I mean, I read some of the things that Tony Smith said after the game yesterday, after Rovers game, saying, you know, I'm not interested, I don't talk about it, I don't think about it. If someone calls me, then I'll talk about it, but no one has. He said something like, he doesn't have to please his supporters by telling them what he's doing next year, which, that's not a great look, is it?
No.
It really isn't. I don't know. If Leeds get someone with NRL experience, I think it's likely to be someone who's an ex-coach that's now an assistant. So someone like Jason Taylor, possibly, which I'd love Jason Taylor to go to Leeds because I saw what he did to West Tigers. And in fact, the problems at the West Tigers can probably still be tracked back to the absolute mess that he left us in. I'd love Leeds to get him. They're talking about Flanagan, who's assistant at... I think he's at St George now. There's a couple of others as well that might fit the bill, but it'd be interesting to see exactly which way they go if they don't go English. Danny Ward
absolutely.
Would be perfect for him, you know. Ward would be perfect for him. He really would.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens there. Obviously, the pessimist in me is thinking, long may that basket case continue. It's great to see it. A good old Leeds meltdown after they were built up in the media to be this and that.
As a Hull supporter, the absolute best case scenario would be they take Tony Smith from Rovers because he's not going to make a massive splash at Leeds. I don't think. I don't think they need a complete new broom, and I think he's too much similar to what they've had. So they take him from Rovers. They don't get any better, and Rovers get worse. I mean, that's a double six, isn't it? That's a double six in the dice game of rugby league for us.
Yeah, absolutely. That could be much better, could it? Yeah, let's say long way the basket chases continue at those two clubs because, enough said. And may our positivity train continue. Let's hope we can get it past June this year. But, finish off Wigan on Thursday. We know what we want. We want a performance. If we get a result, brilliant. But, if we go there, show some fight and the right to play some rugby, it's that cliche that I think we're using every week now. But if we get that goal forward... we mount some pressure when we play in the right areas, and we've got some strike options in this side. We've got some very good players. In fact, we've got some outstanding players, and there's no reason why we can't go there and get a win. We nearly did it last year. I think we got beat 16-14, but then we beat them in the cup the week after. So, we've done all right at Wigan recently. Golden Point win, won back-to-back years 2016-2017. So, let's go there and give a good account of ourselves. So, I'm really looking forward to it. And isn't that a good thing itself to actually be looking forward to all games now rather than dreading them?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? And especially looking forward to an away game at somewhere like Wigan, which, for the best part of my life, I've dreaded.
Absolutely, looking forward to going to Wigan. How mad is that? Usually I hate going there. Best thing about Wigan's Frankie and Benny's, and even that ain't good these days.
True. It's a game where we can put a marker down, even if we lose. It's a game where we can go and really put a marker down and say, this is who we are as a team. This is what we are. This is what we want to be known as, and with the way we've been playing and the way we've performed, I think we're very, very capable of going there and giving a good account of ourselves.
Absolutely, I could not agree more with that, and I just really hope that's what happens. And as always, mate, thanks for your time and a big come on you all.
Definitely.